Welcome to another unwatchable Sixth Sense Media video. We hope you enjoy another low effort installment by Mike and Michelle, made with a special mix of marital spite and rampant misogyny.
Okay. I was supposed to do an interview with you a few weeks ago, and then when they sent this back out, they didn't bother to put the name of your one woman show in here. So I forgot what the name of the show is. It just gives like some of your credits, but it doesn't say what you're promoting.
Oh, is it so is your show like, can I say it? It's a little bit.
Oh yeah, you're fine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a problem.
Okay. All right, so yeah, the name of the show is Disco Dicks and Dykes.
Okay, yeah, I don't know how I forgot that. It's
what's wrong with you, Mike?
Yeah, it's right out there. I mean, it's so easy to, it rolls off the tongue in more ways than one.
I know. You know, but I've been doing a lot of promotion and interviews and stuff, and so many people can't say it. I'm just like, I'm shocked by the amount of people that can't say it with all the things that I see on TV and. You know, like that are just really like in your face. I would, because of the word dicks, it's strange, right? But okay.
We've kind of strayed away from those good old Sam Kinison days where you could just say more or less whatever.
But they're saying so many more edgy things out there, you know? Like, what are we going to say? Disco Richard and Dice? Can we say that?
So,
is that okay? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you're fine. Don't even worry about it. Your show's had its initial kickoff a few weeks ago, right? In the beginning of February?
February 29th.
Wow. I was way off. How many more shows do you have going on, or is it just going to be kind of a perpetual thing?
Well, you know what? I needed to do the first one just to get it off the ground to see if it had legs and just to kind of, like, shed it out, you know, because that's, like, the first time I did it, like, in front of people. Mm-hmm. It's my first play that I've ever written. I mean, it's a play, it's a one-woman show, it has music, it's not a musical. It's so weird. I don't know, I've just been calling it like a plancert or something, concert plancert or a playmedy, because it's very funny, you know, and all that. So yeah, but there will be more, but at the moment, not just yet. Now what I'm doing is I'm taking what I've done, I filmed it, and I will be making a trailer, and then I may just go ahead and like maybe get it out there like on Amazon Prime or Netflix or something, or on HBO. So we'll see.
How did you come up with the show? I mean, since you have so many elements in it, I can't imagine this was just a sit down and just think it out in one shot. It was probably a conglomeration of ideas that all just happened to come together.
Yeah, it's based on my life. It's a true story, and it goes from when I'm about 14 to about 19 or 20. And it just speaks of like growing up, you know, in the Bronx, an urban kid, you know, with dreams, you know, just becoming a successful musician, and how I navigate my way through that and into becoming a successful musician and into, you know, like navigating sexuality and all those things, hence the dicks and dykes.
Oh, that's what it was about. I had no idea. I thought it was something more wholesome. I thought this was going to be a very straight-laced show.
No, it's pretty wholesome. I'm kidding. No, it definitely is edgy. It's really, you know, but that, you know, what, looking at the things that I see out there, you know, it's not raunchy for no reason, you know? But it's got comedic tastings throughout.
Right. And when you're talking about things that affect you personally or your life and sexuality, you can't really, there has to be some, a certain amount of lightheartedness to it, and you're going to have some raunchy bits to it. So I couldn't see it just being, you know, just like a Lifetime movie.
But you know, that's funny, because another person that asked me after they saw it, they're like, you know, you could actually make this like a show or a movie, because if you had characters like the young version of you be played by a younger person or whatever, mm-hmm. it's so interesting. They found it interesting. Like I'm saying it, and if I say, oh, it's so interesting, it sounds like, you know, my head's up my butt. But I wouldn't I wouldn't have put it out there if I didn't think it was interesting. But, mm-hmm. but I wasn't just putting it out there just to say, oh, look how fascinating my life has been. not that. There really is a message in there, you know, and the message being, it's a message of empowerment for all people just to kind of really just follow through and not let things stagnate you or get in your way of your dreams or things that you're looking to pursue. How it doesn't really matter where you come from and all those things. And just about, it's never really too late for any of that. So,
When you were structuring the show, how did you come to that balance of where you're going to have your music, where you're going to have your lighthearted bits, and where you're going to have your raunchy bits? Or how did you put that together?
That's funny you say that. I mean, I've been working on it for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So at the start of it, when I started writing, I didn't know, like, I'm certainly older than 19 now, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, well, when do I stop? What year do I stop? You know, because we could be here all day talking about, you know, this and that and the other. So when am I going to say, you know, this is the part where this is a good place to pause, and then if it's successful, I could continue on with the next 6 years or 10 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I had to sit there, and it took me some time, and I did the whole thing by myself. I sat there, and I thought about where I wanted the music to go and what I wanted the music to be that was going to be supporting me. You know, and because I'm a singer first, definitely people are going to want to hear me sing. They're not going to mm-hmm. want to see me do stand-up all night and do jokes all night, you know, which I'm a comedian. I could do that, but that's not what I'm here to do right now. So mm-hmm. just finding that balance was difficult, and it took me – like weeks to sit there and I kept putting songs in and going, oh no, that sucks. You know, nobody's done like that. You know, and put something else in. And then I try to think about too, not the stuff that I like, but stuff that was relevant for that time as well, that I knew probably was a soundtrack to a lot of people's lives at that time in the 70s and then the 80s kind of thing.
Since you're used to performing in front of people, was this performance a little different? Were you a little bit more hesitant about putting that out there as opposed to your vocal talents?
Absolutely. I was terrified. If you could have been in that room with me, I mean, I was scared. I was scared like 2 weeks before. I was frightened. I mean, I was frightened from the very beginning. But the night of, I mean, I was trembling. My hands were so shaking. I felt sick in my stomach. I was so terrified that nobody was going to like it. I was like, oh my God, what if nobody likes it? Oh my God, what if I get there and I forget the whole script? It's 9,000 words. Mm-hmm. What happens if I forget, you know, and not so much forgetting, yes, my story, how much could I mess it up for sure. But it's written in a certain way to tell the story in a certain way and in chronological order as well. So I didn't want to be telling stories, you know, that belong when I was 14 and I'm telling them when I'm 17 or whatever. I wanted to make sure that it all came together and made sense the way it did on the paper, that I didn't get out there and freak out and just like flop. But, and then it was a sold out show too. And so that was even more pressure. It's like, oh my God, you have a sold out crowd and everybody works so hard for their money and they spent their money to buy these tickets to come see this show. And you just want to make sure it's pleasing to everyone. And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In every way. And then, because it's my story, I'm so vulnerable. I'm just standing out there just telling it. Now you're up for even more judgment. Bad enough everybody looks at, you know, every little thing, listens to everything, and mm-hmm. has a critique about it. It's like, oh, I don't like how you look. Oh, I don't like how you sound. Oh, I hate your story. So, you know, and I just was thinking, like, all those things. And then finally, I just was like, there's nothing you can do now, Kelly. You have to get out there. It felt like the Wizard of Oz. It's like, you've always had it all along. But I was like, get out there. And I did. But like, I would say it took me a good 15 minutes to stop trembling when I was even already on the stage. I was still knees shaking, hands shaking. I don't know if anybody could see that, but I definitely felt it.
When you're recounting your past and your struggles and your triumphs, do you ever hit those spots where you kind of like well up with emotion and you kind of have to push it back down to get on with your story?
Oh my God, all the time. I cried like a child in front of audiences many times. Just a few months ago mm-hmm. with my band Count Basic, we were in Europe and I was singing a song that really touches home to me, and I just lost my aunt who I was very close to, and just singing those words. And if you're a singer or anybody who's telling a story, you're always kind of like an actress. You know what I mean? An actor. Mm-hmm. Because you have to tell that story in a way that's compelling, you know, to people, whether you've lived it or not. But in this case, you know, I've lived those lyrics, and since I'm starting to sing them, I just start crying at the end. It's like, really? And then you feel silly and, you know, oh God, I'm crying in front of everybody. But then there's a point. It's just like, you know what? I'm human. So I'm crying. Okay. You know, that's it. What can you do? So yes, I've embarrassed myself many times. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, not a problem. It's what I do. I guess Clint didn't warn you. I'm kind of an asshole.
No, don't say that. Are you?
Well, no. To separate, like, outside of the mic and away from all the show business stuff, I'm a very nice person. But, you know, to make it in this business, you kind of have to have that person, that abrasive personality to, you know, be noticed. Unfortunately, what I do best as a personality is kind of be a jerk.
Really? I haven't thought that yet. Okay, I guess.
No, during interviews. Not during interviews, because interviews is always about the interviewee. It's always about promoting you. So it has absolutely nothing to do with me promoting myself. That would be a real asshole thing to do. But yeah, no, it's always about it's always about the guest. So yeah, but when I'm doing like shows or I'm filming something, yeah, I've kind of got to put on that persona. And sometimes what really sucks about this business is people can't differentiate between a personality and then the person behind it.
Yeah. I get it.
When you looked out into the audience, when you're getting to those emotional points, do you see other people starting to reflect that emotion? Did you see some people kind of either bring a tissue up to their eye or something like that?
I did see some people get tattoos. Some fans like filmed it, you know, mm-hmm. filmed the song and filmed the moment, and they said, "And here's the moment where we started to cry. Then you started to cry, and I didn't realize that they started to cry too. I guess the emotion in the song, and it was a ballad as well. I guess it touches, you know, people, and even more touching after the fact. Now it's just that, you know, it was in Europe and a lot of people do speak English, but maybe not everybody, mm-hmm. and it was in Vienna, maybe not everybody caught every lyric or whatever, but it doesn't even matter because you could just feel emotion from, you know what I mean? How you mm-hmm. deliver that song and whatnot. So, I feel like I'm really boring. Am I boring you to tears?
not at all. If I was bored, I would give you very straight, curt questions. It's like, do you like what you do? Are you having fun?
I'm talking about it because, you know, as you interview and you talk about it, it can sound sort of like, oh my God, like, get over yourself.
I mean, this is it's a very personal thing to you, which is for all entertainers, their work is personal. If you were to tell me that you just went out there and you did your show and you felt nothing, got nothing, this would be indeed boring, but it's not, because you have that, mm-hmm. you have that emotional connection to your work, and obviously other people connect on a level, whether they can understand your lyrics or not, you still have that power in your voice to reach people, mm-hmm. which is amazing. It's something I have no talent for whatsoever, but people that do, I'm in awe of it.
Thank you. Adorable. Thank you.
So, no problem. So when did the dicks come in?
Well, I started meeting a few jerks. No, I'm just kidding. It was just the story just talks about when I was younger and your society and your parents and the way you're brought up, everybody when you're a young girl, it's just like, oh, you know, you have to be pretty and you have to be able to cook and you have to be able to clean well, you have to make a good wife and you have to be, you know, so you kind of from, you know, and your mind is kind of programmed to believe, and you have to, you know, marry a good boy, blah, blah, blah. You're programmed from a young age. Now things are changing, thank goodness, but I'm not from that time. I'm from the 70s where we were taught still, you know, like about, you know, manners and being ladylike and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's what I was doing. I was doing what everybody else was doing, trying to find a good boy and then not really feeling that sexual connection. And discovering, you know, early on, like my attraction to women and how I felt sexually and all that kind of thing was really strange. And it felt like, oh, that's only things like that's for the devilish people. You know, yeah. Like, there's something wrong with you. If you feel anything other than what we're telling you that you should be feeling, there's something wrong with you. And mm-hmm. so making, and that's where the Vix comes in. It's just like understanding that, and it's just being cheeky. But really, it's all about that, the journey into, you know, sexuality and discovering what you really are and what you like and what you don't like and, you know, what you've trained your mind to believe that you should be liking. You know, it's like maybe you like cream cheese smeared all over your penis. I don't know. But that's your thing. We're not going to judge you for that. You know what I mean? So it's like whatever it is that people think, we're just taught too much to care so much about what everybody thinks about us, who we sleep with, this and that and the other. It's like if people for 1 second take their minds out of other people's bedrooms, you'd see we're so much more alike than we're aware of, you know?
Yeah, it seems the repressed people are the ones that want to know the most about what goes on in your bedroom.
Right, I agree, wholeheartedly. That's true, because I know that I made a joke with somebody. They had some picture with them and another woman or something, and they were so, like, on top of each other. I just made a little joke, like, oh, wow, is that your girlfriend or whatever? And they came back at me so hard about, like, oh, my God, I'm not this, I'm not that. I mean, so it was like, hey, wow, it was just a little joke. But the reaction was so strong, it made me feel like I touched a nerve of some sort. Like,
When you were coming to terms with your sexuality, was there a bit of apprehension and getting disapproved of by your family? Did you have any apprehensions about that? Did it cause you to maybe think, I don't want to go in this direction that I'm actually leaning towards, and maybe I should try to repress myself so I can keep my family happy?
Well, I mean, in the beginning, I did that all the way. I did it, and I married a man and everything. I went, like, all the way. And I'm wondering what you call one of those late-in-life lesbians, the people that they're always something, and then they find out later, and then they're like, oh, my God. It's not that they found out later. They always kind of knew, I think. But then they're, you know, like the Bruce Jenners of the world, maybe, whatever that is, and how long it takes to finally live in your truth and stand in it without abandon or worrying about what anybody thinks. So... Mm-hmm. Like early on, I was kind of like, and I told my husband at the time, I was like, hey, you know, before you marry me, there's some things you should know about me, about my thoughts, you know, and I was like, you know, and how I am. And then he was just kind of like, oh, okay. And then I realized that, wow, it wasn't even, not even a sexual thing with him. You're my best friend and I adore being around you. But what we have is not a sexual connection by no means. That, you know, it's so interesting. And then when I finally understood and whatever, and I made the complete change into what I really wanted to do, I was just like, wow, I just told my mom and she was totally cool about it. And as long as she was, I really didn't care if anybody else was. And I never looked back. I fell in love with an amazing person. And I was just like, oh my God, you know, I brought her on my family. I have my wife now, we're married in 2011. And I introduced her to my entire family, and I don't know if they liked it or not, but no one acted like they didn't. They embraced her, and it's just, we've never looked back since, you know, so.
I think it's good when you give family members no other choice and they're going to have to accept you the way they are, that it breaks down whatever bias they were probably hiding deep down inside, because what are they going to do? Are they going to be uncivil to you? Are they never going to talk to you again?
I think it happens to other people. I've seen other people, you know, talk about those horror stories they have, you know, their family disowns them, this and that and the other. But for me, maybe it's because I was already an adult and I was just kind of like, well, what are you going to do? Take away my trust fund? There is no trust fund. Like, what's anybody going to do? I'm paying my own bills. I'm doing my own thing. I'm successful. What are you going to do to me? Not talk to me? I think I'll live. It's okay. Good. You know what? You're an amazing interviewer. No one has ever asked me these questions before.
Oh, thank you very much. I try to approach it as I never write down questions. I like to feel out how the conversation goes. So, and I appreciate it. I thank you very much. Yeah, especially when like the conversation we had about coming out and finding your sexuality. I shot a mini documentary a couple of years ago with a friend of mine who came out in her late 20s, and she didn't know that she preferred women more than men until a woman actually hit on her, and then she just kind of went with it, and it changed her entire life. And it was interesting to see how that affected her family and how she got in, found her way into the gay scene, and the inner workings of how the gay community is so different than the straight community that surrounds it. It's just, it was such an interesting thing to find out, me as a straight white guy, not really having mm-hmm. that much experience and just learning mm-hmm. so much. It was just, it was, mm-hmm. it was so interesting. And I hate mm-hmm. when people don't treat everyone else like they're humans. They kind of treat it as an oddity when they're asking these questions. I was just like, I just want to know, like, if you're not getting right. any dick, I mean, how do you fill that? How do you fill that, that hole in a very bad the pun, roughest,
but the roughest part, though, I have to say about like all of this is, it feels like you never stop coming out for me mm-hmm. because I'm so feminine and so girly. Every time I meet somebody or whatever, well, not every time, I'm exaggerating, but a lot of times, they say things like, "Oh my gosh, oh, you're so pretty. Your husband's such a lucky man. Your husband this and that and the other." And then I don't want to seem like a liar, and I just end up going, "Well, I have a wife." "What? You're gay? But you're so pretty." And they say really ignorant things like that. Like, oh, I'm sorry. I had to be really ugly. I'm sorry. You know, so like ignorant stuff like that drives me crazy. And I find that you just never stop coming out. It's just like constantly. Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Oh, really? And the shock. Like, oh gosh, yeah.
Are you finding you're getting that kind of response in New York or outside of New York?
Kind of everywhere, to be honest.
Wow, I can understand that where I'm from, but yeah, I couldn't imagine in a major metropolitan area like New York, people would be like, "Oh, well, the only reason I can't believe you're a good-looking lesbian, because I thought it was only the ones that looked horrible that had no other option but to date other women." It just seems like such a weird non-New York thing to say.
Yeah, I think it's just a state of mind. It's certain people are just like that. You know, they could be, you know, New Yorkers, but maybe they still have that tunnel living. And really, it's never anybody really young anyway, so now that I'm thinking about it. So it's somebody a little older
40
who's like,
plus.
Oh, you know, like, oh my god, yeah. It's like, oh wow, okay.
I've been oddly fortunate enough never to be mistaken for gay, because like just my dress sense, which is what one of the two women that I interviewed said to me, is like, "There's no way we'd ever mistake you for being gay because you have no fashion sense whatsoever." And I was like, oh, okay. That's why men never hit on me. That's why I feel so left out.
It's those outfits. No.
these jean that's shorts crazy. And t-shirts just are not turning the men on for some reason.
That's funny. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway. Crazy.
So you've got your first show done. And do you know when you might be bringing it back out or having another showing or even doing the filming that you talked about earlier?
Well, we've done the filming now. That's done.
Okay. So, my mistake.
That was done. No worries. But now let's let this Corona thing die down a minute, because I feel like I just made it through. I was just on the cusp of that. It was February 29th. And then straight away after that, mayhem hit with all this Corona and everybody's canceling mm-hmm. this and that and the other. And I was just thinking, wow, I just made it. So it was really great. And everybody's like, oh, when is there going to be the next? Blah, blah, blah. But I'm thinking I'm just going to wait till this dies down a little bit. So mm-hmm. maybe, where are we? February, March, July. Maybe like August or September, you know, might be good. You don't want to do it too soon either. And then maybe I'll do like a run, like a 2-week run or a week run or something like that, like a longer run of it.
Okay.
You know? And then maybe we'll get you down from your mountain and come.
Yeah. My last question to wrap this up is, where is the best place for people to go to hear your music, purchase your music, see you, connect with you? Where can they go to get all that good info?
Well, I mean, all the music's on iTunes. Kelly Faye, K-E-L-L-I, space. S as in Sam, A as in Apple, E as in Elephant, Faye, you know, Kelly Faye. It's all over iTunes or Google Music or Spotify. It's there. And then to keep up with me, which I do like, you know, keeping up with people so much. Instagram is the same thing, at Kelly Say, or my Facebook music page, Kelly Say Music. And that's it. I'm really kind of accessible person.
So you kind of say that with a pause, like you don't expect people to just be like blowing up your...
Oh. And I still like it. I'm like the one person that ever likes her thing. that's how I am. It's like, you know what? I don't just follow people just so that I look good. Like I'm just going to only follow my famous friends. No, I want to follow, you know, other people in their real lives too. I like that. I don't like that trying to make myself separate from you because I'm so much more interesting. I don't believe that.
Don't worry. You're not more interesting than me.
No, I meant people in general.
Oh, you meant the plebs. I thought you meant someone like me.
No, not you. No.
All right, Kelly. Thank you very much. This has been my favorite interview today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I appreciate your candor and your honesty, and it's been a joy.
And my pleasure. Thank you for having me on. I hope to speak again with you soon.
Will do. Thank you, and have yourself a good night, and good luck with your next show.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.